Allah's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Sayyid Mohsen Kharrazi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/Ian, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Around the World with Reporters.
Saudi Arabia seems changing its diplomatic course with regard to neighboring Qatar as years-long blockade by Riyadh and some of its allies failed to force Doha to bow to their demands. The Kuwaiti foreign minister announced a diplomatic breakthrough, saying Saudi Arabia has decided to reopen its air, land, and sea borders to Qatar.
Based on a suggestion of Sheikh Nawaf Al Ahmed Al Sabah, Emir of the state, an agreement has been reached for the reopening of land and sea borders between the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the state of Qatar starting tonight.
Following the announcement, Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani accepted an invitation to attend a regional Arab summit in Saudi Arabia. Upon his arrival to the Saudi city of Al Ula, Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman gave a warm welcome to Sheikh Tamim. In the summit, the leaders of the six-member Persian Gulf Cooperation Council signed a rapprochement agreement, although the details were not immediately released.
These efforts helped us reach the agreement of the Al-Ula statement that will be signed at this summit, where we affirm our Arab and Islamic solidarity and stability.
During the meeting, however, bin Salman missed no chance to repeat his anti-Iran rhetoric, describing Tehran's missile program as a threat to the region. But what actually had caused the conflict between Doha and Riyadh? In June 2017, Saudi Arabia, together with Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt, accused Qatar, among other things, of meddling in regional affairs and supporting terrorism. They cut ties and transport links with Qatar. Ironically, Saudi Arabia is accused of the same charges it is leveled against Qatar. Doha also repeatedly denied the allegations and said it was targeted because it followed an independent foreign policy. The boycotting countries then issued a list of 13 demands to Doha, including a downgrade in relations with Iran and the closure of the Al Jazeera television news network in return for the reconciliation. Qatar has not publicly bowed to any of the demands. Saudi Arabia has constantly pursued the policy of fueling regional tensions. Some of its allegations against Qatar even demonstrated Saudi hypocrisy, as the kingdom has long been engaged in regional conflicts. While its interference in Libya and Bahrain, as well as its anti-Iran rhetoric, is not hidden anymore, the kingdom's full-fledged war on impoverished Yemen has also exposed its hegemonic agenda. Undoubtedly, Riyadh's decision to ease the Qatar blockade proves the failure of its policy of siege and aggression. However, the credit goes to Doha that stood firm against what it called bullying by some Arab states, and so were the Qatari citizens who seemed galvanized by patriotic feelings.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's army kicked off a maneuver that put to test hundreds of its domestically built unmanned aerial vehicles. The two-day military exercises saw the use of a variety of surveillance and reconnaissance drones, combat drones, bombers, and loitering munitions, which are known as suicide drones. As part of the drill, the Persian Gulf was simulated as the conflict zone, where the Iranian Army's Navy used the suicide drones to destroy their targets.
All of the four forces of the army took part in the drills by deploying their drones. Each force concentrated on their assigned missions. We at the Navy used a variety of our stealth drones that can fly deep into the enemy's waters and keep a close eye on their activities.
The Islamic Republic of Iran's defense industry has been hit by U.S. arms embargoes for four decades. The sanctions have barred Iran from purchasing any foreign weapons, even from its closest allies. However, Iranian officials say the country's defense sector is up and running. The reason is the country has for all these years been developing its own arms,
based on domestic capabilities. And now, drones are the epitome of Iran's advances in the defense industry.
In the field of UAVs, Iran is neck and neck with the few countries that have the technology. We began by producing surveillance UAVs, but today our unmanned aircraft can conduct combat missions as well. And we owe this achievement to US sanctions, because they forced us to rely on our domestic resources.
The Islamic Republic stepped into the field of UAV production around 2011 by reverse engineering American and Israeli drones it electronically commandeered or shot down. Tehran says today it is self-sufficient in designing, producing, and operating a range of UAVs with different applications.
In less than a decade, the term UAV grew from an alien word to a keyword in Iran's airspace. Still, the Iranian army says this is just the tip of the iceberg, and the greater part of Iran's defense capabilities is yet to be publicized.
The Prime Minister made the announcement Monday. The country will be going back to its 2020 mantra, stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. Boris Johnson warned there were going to be tough weeks ahead, but still offered a ray of hope.
The weeks ahead will be the hardest yet. But I really do believe that we're entering the last phase of the struggle, because with every jab that goes into our arms, we are tilting the odds against COVID and in favour of the British people. And thanks to the miracle of science, not only is the end in sight, but we know exactly how we will get there.
Some children across England had one day in school before the announcement was made, and people are vexed by yet another last-minute announcement. The opposition says the government is going to make mistakes, but to make the same mistakes again is unacceptable. But Boris Johnson insists the tier system was working and that the new variant of COVID-19 is what derailed it. The Prime Minister's remarks caused hashtags resign, school closures, and Boris has failed the UK to shoot to the top of the country's Twitter trending charts. He is accused of ignoring the science by insisting schools are safe. The third lockdown will be hard for families juggling work and school, but many companies in the leisure, retail and hospitality sectors feel they might not make it through to the spring. In response to these fears, the Chancellor of the Exchequer made an announcement Tuesday.
Well, in order to help support businesses through a difficult period through to the spring, today we've announced £4.6 billion of additional help. For businesses in the most affected sectors who are asked to close, they will receive up to £9,000 in a one-off cash grant. It's important to remember that comes on top of the existing monthly grants of £3,000 that those businesses receive, and the extension of furlough all the way through to April. You know, we remain committed to protecting jobs and supporting businesses.
The new COVID-19 restrictions come days after the UK and the EU reached a trade and security agreement as part of their Brexit divorce deal, and businesses in Britain had to start trading differently. They were dreading this, but now they say planning around COVID-19 restrictions has made the extra paperwork surrounding post-Brexit trade pale into insignificance. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Christmas holidays are almost over in Italy. It's been a particularly testing time for many as the country is struggling to recover from the economic slowdown caused by the coronavirus pandemic. A study by the National Farmers Association called Diretti has found that about 4 million Italians have been seeking help, many for the first time, to put food on the table during these Christmas festivities. The association has warned the number of people needing food support has doubled compared to last year.
These figures give a snapshot of what the current economic situation is in Italy. 4 million people had to resort to soup kitchens or food pantries this Christmas due to the anti-COVID restrictions. The situation is rapidly aggravating, with our estimates indicating that this year many more will join the ranks of the poor.
About one-third of all people seeking help in Italy during the pandemic are first-time recipients, charitable groups have warned. In a reversal of usual trends, most are Italians and not foreign residents.
According to Coldiretti, among the new poor in Italy, there are those who have lost their jobs, small traders or artisans who were forced to shut down, people employed in the underground economy who do not enjoy special subsidies or public aid and have no savings or assets to fall back on.
E quindi diventa sempre più difficile.
The economic crisis caused by the pandemic is wreaking havoc, especially among the middle classes. We weren't expecting this to happen so quickly.
Alcuni magari avendo perso il lavoro.
Some have lost their job. Some others work much less compared to pre-COVID times. Some friends of mine couldn't buy presents. Some had to give up many other things. It's really hard for an increasing number of people.
The government is reportedly looking at extending the current restrictions until January 15, meaning that non-essential shops will be closed and bars and restaurants can only do takeaway services during weekends. A major question is whether Italy's high schools will reopen as planned on January 7. Max Civili, Rome.
After months of deliberation, witness statements, and arguments made for and against his extradition, the day of reckoning finally arrived, when the world would know the fate of Julian Assange, the co-founder of WikiLeaks. Would he or would he not be extradited to the United States, where he could face up to 175 years in a US supermax prison under special administrative measures? That was the question on everyone's mind. So naturally, there was a big sigh of relief from Assange's supporters when British judge Vanessa Barista ruled against his extradition, a decision the US prosecutors will certainly appeal.
Since languishing in one of the UK's most notorious prisons after being forcibly removed from the Ecuadorian embassy, supporters of Julian Assange hoped and prayed that the courts would side with their position. But nonetheless, the verdict still came as a huge surprise.
I expected the worst. It's been awful throughout. It's been the way, you know, just everything about the case has been completely illegitimate, basically. And the fact that we won, Julian is free, is just beyond belief.
Yet for those closest to Julian, there was still room for concern.
Today is a victory for Julian. Today's victory is the first step towards justice in this case. We are pleased that the court has recognized the seriousness and inhumanity of what he has endured and what he faces. But let's not forget, the indictment in the US has not been dropped. We are extremely concerned that the US government has decided to appeal this decision.
According to Rebecca Vincent from Reporters Without Borders, the judge's comments still left space for journalists reporting on British and American war crimes to be prosecuted going forward.
The situation for journalism and for press freedom in both the UK, the US, and internationally. Because what we heard today, the substance of the ruling, or the substance of the judge's decision before she addressed the health issues, was very much that she agreed with the case that the prosecution had made. She threw out many of the defense's arguments that the free speech arguments and the sort of the arguments that this was indeed a political case. So we disagree with those areas of the decision.
Assange's case has been followed by people from around the world because of its significance and far-reaching implications. And although many are happy with the judge's ruling and ecstatic that Julian Assange will be finally reunited with his family, there was still a feeling that although an important battle had been won, the fight to protect press freedoms and the right to expose US war crimes and crimes against humanity was far from over. Ahmed Cabello, London.
The Islamic movement in Nigeria held a ceremony attended by many of its members to commemorate General Qasem Soleimani. The theme of the event echoed the organization's earlier statement that the world cannot forget the martyrdom of the Iranian general. The Islamic movement described the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani as a war crime, adding that those who carried out the murder must be held to account.
It's very important as an international figure who was able to stop the capture of Syria from the forces of ISIS and Daesh. He was also able to empower the Islamic resistance, the Palestinian Islamic resistance against the Israel, and is also able to stop the advancement of ISIS in Iraq.
Various speakers at the lecture described late General Soleimani as a strong defender of the Palestinian resistance who took a stand against Zionist occupation forces. They said General Soleimani played an important role in the liberation of the Syrian city of Aleppo and eliminating Daesh terrorists. The speakers described General Soleimani as a champion of interreligious harmony who will be missed.
We feel that we are together with the principles on which General Qasem Soleimani died. And that is the principle of justice, the principle of preventing trying to establish justice on the face of the earth, and also the principle of trying to prevent oppression and tyranny.
The lecturer said the martyrdom of General Soleimani and his ally, deputy head of Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, has added a glorious chapter in the history of self-sacrifice. The Islamic movement in Nigeria said General Qasem Soleimani was a man of God and a hero of Islam who succeeded in confronting and defeating enemies of Islam. They said Qasem Soleimani contributed in saving millions of innocent lives and protecting the holy shrines, thereby bringing honor, dignity, and pride to the Muslim Ummah. Benjamin Abdullahi, Kanu.
A ceremony attended by Syrians, Palestinians, Iranians, and Yemenis was held in Damascus to mark the first martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Iran's ambassador to Syria asserted that the resistance front will continue to fight back against any aggression, reiterating the assassination was a sign of the weakness of the United States.
By firing the missile on General Soleimani, the U.S. targeted the Iranian people, their power, and pride. The U.S. wanted to thwart the resistance front's plans, but they failed. They have no choice but to leave the region.
Delegates from Syria's Ba'ath Arab Socialist Party and Yemen also delivered words on General Soleimani and his achievements in leading resistance fighters against the Western plots in the region. Vice Secretary General of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine said General Soleimani told him the only path to liberate Palestine was armed struggle and national unity between Palestinians.
And Soleimani,
General Soleimani urged us to depend on ourselves instead of others. Thanks to his efforts and advices, today we make weapons and the Palestinian resistance is currently in constant development.
Photos of General Soleimani were also exhibited showing moments of his missions across Syria and Iraq. For years, General Soleimani led Iranian military advisors in Syria at Syria's request and played a key role in defeating Daesh terrorists as well as restoring security to hundreds of square kilometers across the Arab country. For over a week, Syrians, Iranians, and Palestinians have commemorated General Soleimani's martyrdom. And as observers say, contrary to the U.S. and its regional allies' will, General Soleimani's assassination has further strengthened unity among all members of the resistance front. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
A compact group of demonstrators took the street again in Paris to protest against police violence, and in particular against the impunity of police officers who used the very controversial method of knee-to-neck choke with fatal consequences. 1 year ago, Cédric Chouviat died after 22 seconds of knee-to-neck choke that caused him fatal wounds. He died in a hospital 2 days later. 4 police officers were directly involved and indicted for involuntary homicide. The family of the victim asked for their suspension.
We have asked the Interior Minister to suspend the 4 police officers involved in the death and the murder of my father. We have been waiting for their suspension for 1 year now. There is no progress at all. We are waiting for a reaction, a real one.
Assa Traoré is the sister of Adama Traoré, murdered also by the knee-on-neck choke, the same method that killed George Floyd. That led to a worldwide protest asking the ban on such dangerous techniques.
That technique of immobilization used by police forces must be forbidden. That technique is fatal. We have denounced that method for 4 years now because Adam Traore died exactly the same way as Sedric Chouviat, with a knee on his neck. Both said their last words, "I can't breathe." If French authorities had listened to us, Sedric Chouviat would not have died.
This protest is not only against police violence, but also against a global security law that would facilitate police violence, or at least would make it more difficult to film police violence. It's thanks to video footage that the beating of a music producer in Paris by police officers last November was made public.
Abnormal things are happening in this country from the police side. The government is obliged to react because there is an important mobilization, especially from the youth, against the global security law. It's important to withdraw that law.
The march ended under the Eiffel Tower, the place where Cédric Chouviat was choked to death. Cédric Chouviat died with a knee on neck choke. As long as this method will not be forbidden by the French government, the impunity of police officers will continue. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
On the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iranian commander General Qasem Soleimani and his companions, Palestinians in the Gaza Strip came together to thank the general for his support in their struggle against the Israeli aggression.
The assassination of General Soleimani has not stopped Iran's support for the Palestinian cause. Our resistance will continue until the liberation of Al-Quds. The blood of General Soleimani will not go in vain. General Soleimani made a turning point in the history of the Palestinian cause.
Many Palestinian leaders and officials joined the mourners and expressed gratitude to Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated in a U.S. airstrike in Baghdad on January. Palestinians consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance for all the oppressed Palestinians.
We stress that the resistance will continue till all Zionist plots are thwarted in the region. The path of General Soleimani will continue. His assassination has made us more determined to keep the resistance alive.
Palestinians stressed that they will follow in the footsteps of General Soleimani, who had a major role in supporting the Palestinian resistance in different fields and making a big difference in the balance of deterrence and rules with the Zionist regime.
General Soleimani was assassinated because he was supporting the resistance front. He always cared about Jerusalem, Al-Quds, and Palestinians. His assassination has made us more united in our fight against the occupation.
Similar gatherings were held in other parts of the region to commemorate the Iranian top commander.
Palestinians here consider General Soleimani a symbol of resistance. They say they will continue his path of struggling against the Israeli occupation until the liberation of Palestine and Jerusalem Al-Quds. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. If we all open our eyes to see, he is all that we need right now. And we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى على آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره. Last night we talked about a very important dimension of balance that must exist in every person and in our community, and that is the balance that we should strike between being emotional and being rational. We need to have both, and if we lose one of them or if we overdo one of them, then it creates problem. I mentioned two hadith about the significance of having a kind of emotional unity or connection or link with Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. And now I'm going to share with you the third hadith, which leads us to another characteristic of the community, and that is truthfulness. Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, in a famous hadith, said, "Inna Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala atla'a ila al-ardi fakhtarana wa khtara lana shi'atan." Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala looked at the earth, looked at the people, and among them he chose us, and he chose for us some Shia, some followers. Yansurunana, these are the people that help us, these are the people that work for achieving our goals. Then Amir al-Mu'minin said, "Man adha'a sirrana adha'ahu Allah ba's al-hadid." If someone discloses our secrets, Allah will make him taste the pain of iron. It means that he is going to see the attacks of the enemies, the swords and bombs and killings coming from enemies, prison, torture, because he was not careful about keeping the secrets. Okay, now because Amir al-Mu'minin mentioned the point about truthfulness, I move to the other characteristic of the community of Ahlul Bayt, which I promised in the first night that inshallah we are going to expand on that. The community of Ahlul Bayt has to be truthful. Hadith says, even with respect to your children, you have to keep your promise. If you say, "I'm going to buy a bicycle for you," you have to buy. You say, "I'm going to take you this weekend, you know, to park," you have to take. Don't say, you know, he will forget. Allah will not forget, even if that child forgets. Hadith says, "Ahibbu as-sibyan warhamuhum wa idha wa'adtumuhum fafu lahum." Love children, be kind to them, and when you promise them, you have to keep. That poor child cannot take you to the court, but Allah is there to defend the right of this child. If you promise your wife to do something, to buy something, to take her to her mother's house, you have to keep your promise. And of course, if ladies, you know, give promise to their husband also, they should keep. So, everyone should be honest and trustworthy. May Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala enable us to equip ourselves and our community with these important and fundamental qualities, inshallah.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers, open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here. who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
Tonight we remember one of the great personalities among the companions of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and that is Habib ibn Madahir al-Asadi. But we must know that he was not only a companion of Imam Hussein, he was indeed a very great companion of Amirul Mu'mineen and Imam Hassan alayhi salam. And it is said that he had also met Rasulullah, but his life was not enabling him to be a companion or to be with Rasulullah for a long time. But he had the honor of seeing Rasulullah. But he was very close to Amirul Mu'mineen alayhi salam, and according to some sources, he took part in all the battles that took place in the time of Amirul Mu'mineen. In Jamal, in Siffin, in Nahrawan, he took part in all the battles. And he was one of Shurtatul Khamis. I don't know if you have heard Shurtatul Khamis. There were few people who were totally dedicated to safeguard, protect Amirul Mu'mineen and implement his commands. He was one of them. And also he was a hafiz of Quran, a memorizer of the Quran. You know, all these companions of Imam Hussein, they were very special. Sometimes we think that they became special just because they managed to be in that day with Imam Hussein alayhi salam and get the great, you know, foes and happiness of Shahada. No. They were in the first place special so that they were given tawfiq to be with Imam. There were many other people who didn't have that tawfiq. There was some honesty in them, some truthfulness in them, that Allah gave them that tawfiq, that they gave their life in that crucial time, and till end of the world, everyone who remembers Hussein remembers them. Everyone who sends salam to Hussein sends salam to them. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah allati hallat fihi. Billions of salam are going to be offered to Imam Hussein and to them. That is great tawfiq. So he was a very special man. He was a hafiz of Quran, and it is said that he was reciting the Quran, entire Quran, in the night. After Salatul Isha, he was reciting. Because, you know, those who are hafiz, they love to recite Quran, and also they need to keep reciting so that they don't forget. Even Imam Hussein alayhi salam, after his martyrdom, he mentioned, as we will explain. He was one of the people who wrote to Imam Hussein alayhi salam when he heard that Imam Hussein has refused to pay allegiance to Yazid. He was one of the people who mobilized other people, other Shia, and, you know, said we should invite Imam and we should help Imam. And when Muslim ibn Aqil entered Kufa, he was with Muslim. He helped Muslim. According to some books, he and Muslim ibn Awsaja, they were, you know, very close. So they were asking people to give bay'ah to Imam Hussein. So the people of Kufa, they were paying bay'ah to Imam Hussein alayhi salam by these two people asking them. But unfortunately, when Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad entered Kufa and, you know, started threatening people, and people left alone Muslim ibn Aqil, those people also who paid allegiance, you know, unfortunately withdrew. Then the tribes of Muslim ibn Awsaja and Habib ibn Muzahir asked them to go with them and try to hide them so that they would not be killed, because they will remain, you know, without any helper. When Imam Hussein alayhi salam entered Karbala, then Habib and Muslim ibn Awsaja, they took the opportunity to go and join Imam Hussein alayhi salam in Karbala. But they were only traveling during the night. During the day, they were hiding themselves. And finally, they managed to reach Imam Hussein.
That was The Characters of Shia Community by Hojatul Islam, Dr. Shomali, in the program The Spiritual Message of Islam.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Oh Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Please include us among the best followers of Muhammad and Ali Muhammad. Please protect and safeguard our community and our families and our youths from everything that you don't like. Oh Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. Oh Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraji, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and Ali Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraji who are alive. Oh Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillah rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say. Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
the limelight.
Trump's nightmarish giveaway to polluters will sicken millions of most vulnerable people across the U.S., says Julia Conley, writer, in an article published under the heading, "This Must Be Undone. Trump EPA Finalizes Anti-Science Rule to Limit Use of Public Health Research." Stay tuned for the details, please. Public health and environmental science experts on Tuesday, January 5th, said the EPA's newly finalized rule limiting the research that can be used to pass regulations must be reversed by the incoming Biden administration to end President Donald Trump's coddling of polluting industries. Basing its decision on what one former EPA scientist called a conspiracy theory about secrecy at the agency, Administrator Andrew Wheeler finalized the Strengthening Transparency in Regulatory Science rule, which will require researchers to disclose raw data, including personal medical records from their public health studies, before the agency will pass new regulations relying on the research. The rule will apply to those response studies in which scientists evaluate how much of a substance creates adverse health outcomes in people. With what the Trump administration has called the secret science rule in place, the EPA could decline to regulate dangerous emissions if it doesn't have access to raw data, including many records that are confidential. Trump's nightmarish giveaway to polluters will sicken millions of most vulnerable people across the U.S., said Family Knob, EPA policy specialist at the Center for Biological Diversity. This absurd rule forces the EPA to stick its head in the sand and pretend the most vital science about people's health doesn't exist. In an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal on Monday, January 5th, former coal lobbyist Wheeler framed the rule as one aimed at protecting Americans' personal freedom, writing, "If the American people are to be regulated by interpretation of these scientific studies, they observe to scrutinize the data as part of the scientific process and American self-government." The fact that most human health data cannot legally be given to the EPA to help it make regulatory decisions, said epidemiologist Eric Figelding, is an evil catch. The people pushing it are claiming it's in the interest of science, but the entire independent science world says it's not. Chris Zabra, a former director of the EPA Science Advisory Board, told the Washington Post, "This is a bold attempt to get science out of the way so special interests can do what they want." Now that the rule is finalized, Joe Biden and his incoming team at the EPA will likely face months of work to overturn the measure, according to the Post. Scientists called on Biden to begin working immediately on reversing the rule when he takes office on January 20th. Thankfully, this administration and its coddling of polluting industries is finally coming to an end, said Vijay Limai, a climate and health scientist at the Natural Resources Defense Council. Unwinding this action must be at the top of the agenda for the new leadership at EPA, because it undermines everything else the agency wants and needs to do. We look forward to working with the incoming administration to get back to using sound science to guide policies that protect health and combat the climate crisis. Several members of the science community debunked the notion that disclosing raw personal data is necessary to effectively regulate pollution. There is no evidence EPA practices secret science, former head of the Office of Science Advisor Thomas Sinks told the Post. I'm unaware of an example where EPA hasn't clearly stated what science it is using in its rulemaking. Dr. Gretchen Goldman of the Union for Concerned Scientists pointed to what she called excessive requirements scientists must fulfill in order for their research to be used by the EPA. At UCS, Dr. Andrew Rosenberg noted that the EPA is weakening its own ability to regulate pollution in the midst of a pandemic and climate crisis in which poor health outcomes have been linked to heavy exposure to emissions. EPA has chosen to finalize these restrictions on science during the worst public health crisis in our lifetime, said Rosenberg in a statement. This rule would interfere with the agency's urgent, ongoing work on a range of issues, including links between environmental factors and COVID-19, the impacts of wildfire smoke on public health, and the effects of the pesticide chlorpyrifos on children by undermining the EPA's ability to use the best available science. It's a willful decision to throw away the exact tools the agency needs now. That EPA leadership has overruled the input of the scientific community, the voices of environmental justice advocates, and simple common sense to push this rule is beyond disappointing, he added. It's a deliberate refusal to protect people's lives.
وَقَضَى رَبُّكَ أَلَّا تَعْبُدُوا إِلَّا إِيَّاهُ وَبِالْوَالِدَيْنِ إِحْسَانًا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
This type of right that Imam Sajjad alayhi salam speaks about in his treatise is the right of God, the right of Allah, Haqqullah.
For Humanity, a commentary on Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam.
By Hujjatul Islam, Zayd As-Salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to IRIB English Radio and our program For Humanity, where we are discussing the important book that has been inherited down to us from Imam Ali al-Sajjad Zain al-Abidin, peace be upon him, called Risalatul Huquq, the Treaties of Rights. And there are many lessons that we are all able to learn as humanity. And that's why the program is called For Humanity. We're up to important rites that, of course, all of them are important, but this is something that will bring about good society, and that is the rite number 37, Haqqul Khaliṭ, the rights of the associates, or who you mix with. Now, in Arabic, as we know, khalata means to mix, and al-khaliṭ means the person who you mingle with, the person who you mix with. And of course, there are huquq here, huquq coming from your side, rights coming from your side, and also rights coming from your the associate side, those who you are mixing with. There's a very famous Arabic saying, and it says, tell me who you mix with, and I will tell you who you are. You are easily able to define what kind of a person he or she may be based on the type of people that they mix with. And that's why it's so, so important for us to be extra, extra cautious as to who we associate ourselves with and who we mix with. As human beings, we like to socialize. We like to mix with people. And of course, that's a good thing. It's a healthy thing. We don't want to be antisocial people. We don't want to alienate ourselves. We don't want to become hermits where, you know, we have absolutely no kind of interaction with other people. So we like to mingle and mix with people, and it's very intriguing for us to also get to know new faces and new people. You know, this is all a part of the process of socializing, and we can clearly see this in our own society as well. You know, we like to get to know new people, but there must be some kind of criteria, there must be some kind of principles that we need to lie down for ourselves and for others in order to keep us safe. Because we have habits as individuals, and sometimes we pick up on these habits ourselves, and sometimes we pick them up from other people. You know, I'm giving an introduction to all of these things. They're just an introduction to what we need to prepare ourselves when we look into the very words of Imam As-Sajjad, peace be upon him. We'll just go for a quick break and we will be back soon.
Dear listeners, you're listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome again back, dear listeners, and we're speaking about the rights of your associates, or the rights of those who you are mixing with. And there are a few preliminary pieces of information that I would like to share before I read out this segment from Risalatul Huquq. I was mentioning that we have habits as individuals, and some of these habits we pick up ourselves, some of them we pick from others. Some come and go very, very quickly, and some stay for a long time. And sometimes even there could be habits that turn into addictions. And this is why I said that it's very important for us to be extra, extra cautious as to who we want to socialize with, which type of people we want to mingle and mix with. Because naturally, as human beings, it's easier for us to be influenced by others, or also for us to influence others who are around us. And sometimes we're so absorbed by our surroundings and our environment, we can't let go. You know, there are cases where we have all experienced where we kind of become emotionally attached to this particular person or this particular group of people. So much so that it probably turns into a kind of a gang, you know, so much so that, you know, we are not able to get out of it. You know, this is where issues become critical and dangerous. How are we able to avoid all of this? By realizing that we need to be more cautious of our surroundings, of those who we associate with, those who we mix and socialize with. And it's not just an issue of religion, it's something more than that as well, because it's more of how you're able to reflect your image on others and how the image of others is reflecting on you. We're like sponges, and that's why I use the word absorb. You know, we are influenced very quickly by people who are around us, and that's why, you know, you sometimes might see a very good guy, a good girl from good family, but all of a sudden they've just gone off track. And a main reason is associates, those who are around him or her who influence them in the negative way. There's a lot that we can do about this, but most importantly, it starts with me having that will, having that strength to be able to make sure that I am more picky with my friends, that I am more observant of the type of people that I wish to associate with and socialize with as well, because I know that it's all going to change me as an individual, whether it be to the good or whether it be to the bad. This is a brief introduction to the topic of the rights of associates. We will continue on in our next segment. Please visit us on www.parstoday.com, or you're able to email at englishradio@irib.ir. Until our next program, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
صلي يا ربي على طه الأمين رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.